Bruner, Doug Kovacs, Jen Brinkman, and many others. But for the purposes of the seminar, we're going to do some of the talking, so I just want to introduce this. I didn't make GaryCon last year because I had a baby, which was awesome. But yay! The baby turns 1 year old in like a week and a half, 2 weeks. I should probably know that, but sometime soon. But in the coming years, I'm hoping to bring my older son here to GaryCon. And it's awesome to see how many of you guys are coming now with your kids since I've been coming here since, I think, GaryCon 2. And a lot of you guys, I guess the kids were young, but now you're coming back with kids, which is awesome, and it's awesome to see them playing these games. So
sometimes even their own kids.
Yeah, it's good. Anyway, welcome here. For those of you who don't know, now is a great time to be a DCC fan on Kickstarter. We have a free license for third-party creators, and there's a whopping 6 Kickstarters running right now for third-party DCC products. We don't actually make any money off these. It's all just guys in the community who are... they want to share their ideas with you guys, so if you haven't already checked it out, just check it out. It's really cool what's happening on Kickstarter for DCC fans. So I'm going to try to be done by 2 o'clock, because I know a lot of you guys have 2 o'clock games. So we're going to cover a lot of ground, maybe kind of quick. If we have room at the end, we'll answer some questions, but otherwise we're just going to get started. So first, I want to talk a little bit about art. And as you guys may know, Doug Kovacs is a great artist, and he's here in person, and he was going to show off some awesome stuff. So come on up, Doug. And I'm going to come up too, just to be the Dana. So you guys know we have several really cool projects going right now. One of them is Dungeon Crawl Classics Dying Earth, which Mark is leading up, and we'll talk about in a sec. But Doug has some rough drafts of the art. And these are early sketches. You know, obviously this is not final. But anyway. Ooh. You want to talk to this, Doug?
Put your hands up. Put my hands up.
So Dying Earth, right?
All right.
If you guys haven't read the books, you can get them on Audible and listen to them. I haven't seen a cover for Dying Earth that I feel like is as good as this one. I got to Jack Vance a little bit later. I'd read a lot of the Appendix N already, but I wanted to read this book based on this cover because it's so weird looking. And I actually only ever read it when I was drunk, but that's over now. So, but that cover just it captures some kind of feeling to it that I don't think I've seen for anything else. And it's a little bit of a challenge to do something where the sun is red, because imagine if the light source was red, everything would be very dark. So I'm trying to kind of reproduce that color scheme here and then add my own stuff to it. So,
yeah, go ahead.
Are we going too long?
You got 20 seconds left.
I think it's chapter 2. Can I find this? Actually, you try to find it.
I'll try to find it.
While I talk about this. It's chapter 2, Sill. The first sentence in there, read that. That's kind of what this is. So I'm just inspired mostly. A lot of Jack Vance is a lot of extensive conversation, which is totally great, but you can't really capture it in a painting. So, but there's many scenes in Eyes of the Overworld and Kugel's Saga where it starts out, Kugel's just like, trudging across the landscape, going from one thing to the next thing, and the earth's dying, and it's pretty great, right? So
yeah, here's the line. Sunset across the northern wastelands was a mournful process, languid as the bleeding of a dead animal. Twilight came to find Kugel toiling across the salt marsh.
Right.
That's perfect.
So then after that, he finds a broken tower, some bandits chase him up in there, he encounters a ghost, he gets cursed by the ghost, and he gets cursed by the bandits after he kills him. So I just ruined the story for you.
This is awesome. So guys, this is like the early, rough draft. It'll get refined many times, but it's awesome.
Right.
It's so very inspiring, I think.
If it was a wraparound.
We were debating this yesterday.
DCC would probably go there, and that would be a back cover. So let's show the other ones real quick.
Yeah, so another one that's in the works, as you guys know, Harley Stroh has been working on DCC number 100 for approximately 100 years. And it's an amazing module. It's the one we showed you pictures of. It has 4 spinning wheels. It's a dungeon where all the parts spin and interact. I don't know how we're going to manufacture this. But Ducks work on the art, and it's awesome.
So, yeah, again, a wraparound cover. Yeah. So Harley, I was texting back and forth with Harley, and he was giving me suggestions. And the core of this one is that there's some monastery of priest philosophers, I think, who are summoning up chaos from outside of the universe and somehow interacting with the four elements and specifically leaving out air. And so there's void, water, fire, and earth. And this is all the nonsense that's beyond the universe, and that's the universe right there, waiting to be destroyed, like it always is, right? So, there's that, right? There you go. And then the last one is, this is a little bit rougher and hard to read from far away, but this is what's it called?
Riders on the Phlogiston, which was the tournament last year. So many of you guys probably played that at Gen Con, and it'll come out at this year's Gen Con.
So it's a dungeon with a lot of stuff going on, right?
That's mostly what we do here.
It's really rough here, but we're talking about putting more monsters in, and the whole adventure is about shooting through the, between dimensions and going to different worlds and doing dungeons, so. So that's kind of what's going on here. It'll be refined, but like process-wise, this is if you can't come by my booth, all this stuff is too small. But I have a bunch of like earlier, I'll figure stuff out smaller before going on to larger. And there's always points at which you can revise things and change things, make them better. Like it doesn't. So anybody who you talk to that tells you, I'm an artist, or I want to be an artist, I have everything in my head, I just have to get it on paper, this is total bullshit. Like, you never know what you're going to do until you do it. Yep. And this is proof. Like, you have to figure it out.
And then speaking of doing it, I want to talk to you guys for a minute about art. So there's many interpretations of good art there. He'll probably chime in with
correct him on something.
Yes,
here.
Yes. Professor Kovacs. I'm not going to talk about good art versus bad art, but what I want to talk about is process. What's interesting about the way Doug works is that there's a physical artifact to his work, right? He just showed you a sketch here, slightly more refined picture on board, eventually there will be a painting. In this day and age, many artists don't work that way. It's actually hard for me now to find artists who can do physical art because it's typically digital art, which is the name of the game now. And for whatever reason, I love physical art. It's just an attraction that I have to it. I think the pictures often look better, the colors are brighter. When you look at digital art, it's often designed to be viewed from a backlit screen, as opposed to this art, which is designed to be viewed with light source coming forward. So what you'll find when you look at the DCC line is you'll often find you'll always find art that's been produced physically. There's a digital scanning process that you can't avoid. But I want to show you guys some of the stuff that I look for in art, which is funny because many people would view this as criticisms, and I view it as positives. One of these are actually blown up images from the work of Brad McDevitt. And I'll explain why I picked these images in a minute. But if you look at them, you'll see there's different shades of black. Like in this corner, it's not a uniform black. If you look at digital art, the blacks are almost always very uniform because they're produced digitally and it's consistent. If you look at physical art, it's often brushwork or ink work, and the artist, the texture changes and so on. So that's one of the things I like about some of the physical art that we publish. These particular pictures were done using a scratchboard technique. I don't know if you guys saw the article on our website a couple weeks ago. Scratchboard is a technique that's essentially been dead for over 100 years. But it was used, we like Appendix N. A lot of the artists who illustrated the works in Appendix N that were originally published in the pulp magazines back in the 30s worked in a technique called scratchboard, including Virgil Finley, who many of you may know is one of the best artists that era, Hans Bach. Yeah, exactly. Like, really incredible artists. And they used a technique that is literally dead. Nobody knows how to do it anymore. The way scratchboard works, yes.
They make you do scratchboard in high school art class.
Do they anymore, though, in your high school class?
I don't know. But they did in the late 80s.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. It'd be cool if they're still doing that. Like, I'm not.
I think it's kind of like Catcher in the Rye.
They don't
like, nobody can write it, but everybody reads it in high school.
That could be.
So the way Brad actually did these images via scratchboard, the way he did it was that He took a piece of board, these are the originals, you coat it with ink, so you basically get a black piece of paper, then you scratch off the ink to reveal the white. You have to think totally in reverse because you're thinking inverted. You have to, as opposed to digital work where it's a soft motion, what's called, it's a physical scraping. So many things about it are different. Brad's now working in the style, some other people are working in the style, and it's just really cool to see the return of something that is a technique that's a, I think Brad said, you know, it was cutting edge in 1933, and here Kumi Games are bringing it back. So I just wanted to comment on the fact that we are producing art that's physical. It does have a unique look, and I think there's elements of it that you can see in the art, whether it's the shades of gray, whether it's the bits of pencil that are still there after not being fully erased. Stefan often leaves, I like your bits of pencil, but little bits of pencil sketch that are visible in his art. The gray tones that a lot of the guys, like Stefan's actually been doing a lot of gray ink washes in his work lately, and there's like a splotchiness to it that when you do digital grays, it's very smooth, and you don't get that texture that you get in some of the other work. So this is just some of the things you may see in our art, and you may not even notice initially when you're looking at these books that these qualities are there, but if you compare it to many of the other books that are being published now in the RPG space, I think it's a very distinctive look. Anything else you want to add?
You guys should come to my booth and buy the Hobonomicon, which is DCC stuff where I cut Joe out of the process. So on the smart cool scale, it's slightly less smart, maybe, and slightly more cool.
Alright. Cool. And thanks, Doug. I know you had to run for something, but anything else you want to add before?
Office.
No, I'm good.
Cool. Thanks. Alright, guys, so that's a little bit on the art process. Now we're going to talk about some current projects before we get into some of the new announcements. So actually, Brendan is here. This is Mr. Brendan LaSalle. Brendan is working on X-Wall Classics and has been for a while. I was thinking maybe you could tell them how it's going, how many words you've written, what are you working on, stuff like that.
Sure. So as of last Monday, I hit 160,000 words on the main manuscript, and I'm now considering it, like that's, to me, is it's in a very rough, but an actual draft form. So there's an actual draft done of it. Some of the spells are just sketched out, and I might add some, I'm definitely going to add some more monsters after. Because gosh darn it, the karate dragon has to live. It's in a pretty much done format at this point. And I've had a lot of fun working on it, and it's been my main project for a while now. So I hope that you guys will enjoy, give X-Crawl Classics a try. It's definitely strange. I don't know where it falls on the cool smart scale, but it makes me laugh though every time I play it. So.
Now tell them about the half-orc playtest. You guys, X-Crawl, hopefully you've all played it in one version or another, but it's a tremendous amount of fun. It's televised dungeon crawling mixed in with celebrity status,
reality TV, gladiator games, and
win fabulous prizes.
And a little NASCAR patch over, sprinkled in that there for fun. So one of the new classes is the half-orc, and I've had people are really enjoying that in a lot of the playtests, especially for convention games. So Half-Orc, he's a brawler type. He has a D-die like you'd expect. But his special thing is he has a reckless attack. So at the end of his combat round, if he wants to keep going, he can give his opponent one free shot on him. And if the opponent takes that shot, like he puts his face out there, if the opponent takes that shot, whatever happens, live or die, the Half-Orc gets to get one shot up against him. He gets one extra shot with an increased chance of a critical. So for a certain kind of convention player who is, adheres to my philosophy of private like you stole it, it's kind of the ultimate flowering of that version of the fighter and such. One that's certainly not going to make it home, unless you get real, real lucky and such. I've had a lot of fun with that. And some people I had one game where a guy refused not to do that at any time. And he might hold the record of being like healed back from zero hit points to the most stat damage in one round of anything I've ever had anything to do with. I mean, like seven times or something. And they all cheered him on. The crowd loved it. It was his thing. What I'm saying? So it was a lot of fun. And there are a lot of, it's going to have a bunch of new classes. It's going to have,
I think there's a gnome involved.
There's a gnome. Yeah. Thank you. And actually, I'm really like, if you like trickster type characters, if you like people who are slick, one of the gnome's special ability, he can draw aggro. So the gnome can, in the middle of a fight, if you're fighting over here, the gnome can be like, over here. And if the person doesn't make their, if there's dice rolls involved, but if the creature doesn't fail, either he must attack the gnome that next round, and like even if that means he moves out of melee and gets a couple of free shots on him as he runs away, But he also, like, either that or if he decides to not do it, he gets a pretty significant penalty on his attacks that round. So, yeah, gnomes have some illusion type spells. They've got a little bit of thief skill things happening on. So far in playtests, they've been real popular. Or people are going like, gnomes, are you kidding me? People who have tried them have really enjoyed them. Most people have poo-pooed them because of the whole gnome thing. But there you go.
So it's like the manuscript's basically done, or 95% done.
I would say it's in a draft form now. It needs a really good shakedown. Some of the spells are just sketched out, like there's no real just the numbers of what's going on, and no descriptive text has happened and such. I've had a lot of fantastic help. Val, Clara Chibi Valier, has done some fantastic work for it. It's got five new patrons, including Prometheus, who Val has done, and it's just like, it'll cross over nicely into your regular DCC game. It's one you might want to consider as an option if you don't mind a little blood and gore involved with your spellcasting, which I'm thinking most of you guys do not. I've also done some of my material effects. It's got a whole, I wanted it to have a filled out material table. So, rolling material magic, it's a few percentage, and then you add 10 times your luck modifier. So I figured, let's do it all the way up. So mine goes from negative 29, which is pretty gross if you get that one, all the way up to 130, depending and such. So, it could happen, and then gnomes have their own mercurial table as well, because the gnomes needed a mercurial table.
So guys, X-Crawl's been around for 2002.
Yeah. Oh, well, since X-Crawl Classics. I've been running X-Crawl Classics since 2016 Gen Con.
That's amazing. Yeah. And this is what makes a fun game. Like he must have run, I don't know how many sessions of this. The playtester less than the manuscript is this long. So it's gonna be a lot of fun and very polished, and it'll be great. So it's coming along soon. You'll hear more about it as it gets to the front.
Yeah, if you're one of my playtesters, check your inbox.
Alright, cool. So I'm gonna step over here and walk you guys through some of these fancy posters. We're gonna talk about some stuff going on. I made notes, I don't forget anything. So this is the picture you just saw. Let's see what's behind that. So this is we've been working on the next volume of the Judges Guild Collector's Edition. That was the giant book that we published, I think, 2 to 3 years ago. This is a picture, for those of you who can see it, of the original copies of Dungeoneer magazine. So Dungeoneer number one is the magazine that Janelle Jacquelise published in 1976, the same month that TSR released the first issue of The Dragon. It goes back that far. It was the original D&D zine. What we were able to do, working with Bob Bloodside Jr. and Janelle Jacquelise, they actually have copies of the original zine editions. So many of you have probably seen the Judges Guild did a re-release of like the first six issues. I had actually never seen a copy of the original zine. So we have for sale in the dealer's room an actual original scanner number one, but the collector edition will feature all of these, which is kind of a new find for us, in addition to Book of Treasure Maps, Caverns of Thracia, Dark Tower, some of the issues of Judges Guild Journal, etc. And it's slowly moving along as we scan all this stuff. So this is just to let you know it's still moving along. This is an example of some of the scanning work. One of the fellows who does the scanning is Steve Crompton. Some of you guys may know that name. He's the guy who invented Grimtooth, among other things. But this is something he provided of a before and after picture of how he does this crazy level of scanning that he does. But he goes over each page, scans the originals. Most of the originals are 40 years old. And this is the before. You can even see they're all typewritten. Even the typewriter letters are all kind of goofy. And he cleans it all up. So this is the slow, steady process to making this stuff look very legible and very readable, which you'll eventually benefit from. The other thing he's done is that some of the original issues of Dungeoneer had I'm going to turn this whole thing sideways so I don't steal the thunder of the next one. But they had printer registration issues. So when the printer printed the colors, the two colors are supposed to go like this, and they ended up off slightly. So you'll see this is the original one, and you can see this better if you come up close afterwards, where the colors didn't line up with the black ink, and this is him having hand redrawn all the colors to get them to match this right. So it's pretty crazy what he's done. And but when you guys finally get a final version of this thing I've been talking about for years, it's going to be really impressive and it's going to look great. So Judges Guild is still moving along. The next thing I wanted to show you was the next issue of Tales from the Magician's Skull. So this is the magazine that we launched, I guess, about a year ago, which is a magazine of sword and sorcery fiction. This is our attempt to stay connected to Appendix N via new works in the same thematic vein as some of the original Appendix N works. And we launched the Kickstarter for the first two issues. The response was great. So we're actually almost done with the third issue and going to eventually offer subscriptions and keep moving forward. But we wanted to get the third issue done first. Anyway, this is the cover for it. This is by San Julian. Many of you guys know his name. He or know his work, even if you don't know his name. He did a lot of the covers for Creepy Magazine and Eerie Magazine back in the 70s, as well as a ton of other stuff that you'll know immediately when you see it. He did a lot of the Vampirella covers back in the 70s. He does amazing work, a lot of work for heavy metal. This is an illustration of one of the stories in the magazine. But anyway, this is the cover number 3. You'll see this on Kickstarter in a month, month and a half, something like that. We're almost done putting it together. The editor, Howard Andrew Jones, for those of you who don't know, he's now editing... He works now for the company that publishes Conan, and he's now editing the current line of Conan fiction. So he's about as close as you can get to the pulsing vein of Appendix N. And then his other gig is working on this as the editor for this magazine, so it's pretty awesome. So the lineup of the articles for Shinobi 3 are great. It's awesome, and you'll see more of this soon. So the next thing I want to talk about, which was the Cthulhu alphabet. I think you've seen this cover before. This is Errol Otis's cover. This one has finally come into the forefront of the queue. It's in the spirit of the dungeon alphabet. You know, A is for altars, B is for books, C is for cultists, N is for Nyarlathotep, and so on. But every page is heavily illustrated, really beautifully done, and has random tables for generating sort of Cthulhu mythos flavor into your games of any kind, whether it's Call of Cthulhu, DCC, whatever. This cover is by Errol Otis, which I think really sums up Cthulhu in a cool way. But you'll see this on Kickstarter within a month or so, I think. We've been working on this for like 2 years, but all the art's finally done. There's a crazy amount of art. I mean, there's art on every single page, mixed in with the tables, just like Dungeon Alphabet, and it looks great. What do I want to talk about next? All right, so this is the cover to DCC number 99, which is the Star Wound of Abaddon. So we had discussed this somewhere, but Marzio, I'm going to butcher his last name, but Muscaderi wrote this, and it won our Game Hole game design competition, I want to say in... year and a half ago, whenever that was. And the art is now complete by William McCoslin did this cover. And you'll see this, it's moving through the layout process, and it'll hopefully be out in the summer. The next thing I want to talk about was, I'll do some of the announcements and I'll talk to you guys. So let me grab some books. So Appendix N, guys all know, is the list of books that inspired Gary Gygax to write D&D. There's an author in there called Saberhagen, Fred Saberhagen, and the only book actually mentioned in there is this one, Changeling Earth, which is a really great book. If you haven't read this, it starts off this series that is a mix of, and it's almost like mutant world classics, post-apocalyptic, you know, nuclear weapons have become sentient, radioactive clouds become demons, there's sorcery, there's a radioactive atomic-powered tank called the Elephant, which is a mysterious artifact of the past. Like, it's really an amazing adventure story. It goes over 3 books. These are the original 3. Changeling Earth, The Broken Lands, and The Black Mounds. And these are collectively called the Empire of the East series. This is one of the more obscure books in Appendix N. It's not Jack Vance, it's not Fritz Leiber, but it's an awesome series and worth reading. And I when I read it, my mind was swimming with ideas. So we've actually worked with the estate of Fred Saberhagen to publish Dungeon Crawl Classics, Empire of the East. So, yeah. That's pretty cool. So, this is the cover. This is by Ian Miller. Ian hasn't done a lot of D&D art, but Ian basically defined the look of Warhammer 40,000. So if you were playing Games Workshop products in the 80s, you would know his art. He did all the defining images for a lot of the 40K books. If you read Realms of Chaos, the book that came out in like 88, one of the most amazing books that Games Workshop ever published, he did the cover to that. And he actually has, if you buy one of the books of his art, he has one of the coolest illustrations of Cthulhu that I've ever seen. It's just amazing. You can buy Ian Miller's book on Amazon, probably, but it's an amazing art book. Anyway, but Ian did this illustration for the cover, Dungeon Crawl Classics, Empire of the East, officially licensed by the estate of Fred Saberhagen. This will be a standalone book, and it'll probably come out later this year. It's not nearly as massive as, you know, Fritz Leiber wrote a lot of, like, Mark stories, and even the works of Jack Vance are quite extensive. This is not, you know, it's not going to be quite as big, but it's a lot of great material for running, you know, post-apocalyptic / you just got to read books. It's awesome. And you can kind of see here, you have what was called the Elephant, the giant tank. You have the fantasy components. You have the radioactive demons. It's going to be a great book, and the art's amazing. So Jason Bay is the lead designer on this. You can find him in the Trollords booth, but he runs a lot of DCC, as well as a lot of stuff for Trollords, CNC, and so on. And he's done a great job in doing it. So the next thing I want to talk about was the next release in the original Adventures, Reincarnated Mind. And I'm going to talk to Mike about this once I flip this over. But as you guys know, we published Into the Borderlands last year, which a lot of folks liked, which was great. Then we did Isle of Dread after that, and we're working with Wizards of the Coast to sort of keep continuing that. And we're trading off between, you know, the tried and true bestsellers and the stuff that we all just love and really want to work on and talk about. So the next one is going to be
Expedition to the Burial Caves. Oh.
And this guy, Michael Curtis, is the guy who converted it to 5th edition.
I did.
No. So Mike, maybe you can tell us about how that went.
Well, it went well. It was, strangely enough, is after you write a DCC adventure which has time travelers and cavemen, and then you write some Metamorphosis Alpha, you are strangely trained to deal with, you know, sci-fi and fantasy elements interacting. So
yeah.
I think it was a natural fit for that one. So that was a lot of fun to go back to, because that, you know, obviously from the response that got, apparently yes. People have a lot of fond, well, we'll call them Vaughn memories. I'm sure some people have less than Vaughn memories about, you know, in certain, you know, runs in with police robots. And I think somewhere there's still a few people's characters who are languishing, you know, in the police headquarters somewhere on level one, you know, waiting to be rescued. It's not happening. but going through that one, that is, I mean, as people may know, that was originally a tournament module. So Kevin, go through that one, you know, A to Z on that. It's been a while since I take a look at that and looking at it. From a design point of view, and how tight a dungeon that is. I mean, that really is. It's like, you know, from like welcome to the mysterious cave to the end of like, hey, get the hell out. You know, I mean, it is really just. And here's a boulet for your troubles. You know. So there is not. There, I mean, there is not a lot of fat on that module. I mean, that is a lean, mean module. So having to go back and go through that was, you know, obviously we like to add additional stuff to it. So it was kind of challenging to figure out like, okay, how are we going to expand on this already lean module? But luckily we found a way. We see what Gary kind of dropped and either was trimmed for space reasons or just because, you know, he forgot about it or whatever. There's a couple like dangling things. Like the whole thing is like, you know, there's this invasion going on and people's forts are being destroyed, and if you read the adventure, it's just like, yeah, that's not in there. That's just, you know, it's more like the things are being thrown out the airlock, and they're having to deal with it. But there's no real sense to it, so we got to play around with that a little bit. We kind of flesh out the area around the dungeon. I feel like I shouldn't get too far into it, just in case there are some people here who are unaware of the, you know, what exactly the expedition uncovers. But everybody else who does know, you know, that's not your, you know. Not your typical. There's no horse guarding a 10x10 room with a jet in there, you know, or if there are, you know, maybe there are now. I don't know.
Maybe there are. We're not telling you. So,
that's a great one. It's like in Gary's case, a lot of them were like the monsters that were used were the like. Let me go through the monster manual and find the weird monsters that nobody was going to use, and then well, apparently I don't have enough weird monsters, so I have to make up some weird monsters. So. Luckily, there's been some more weird monsters which come down the pike, you know. So I had a little more room to play around with. But it is challenging because you can't do at this point a vampire would be good, but you can't do a vampire because it's just thematically it just does not fit or anything. So that was a lot of fun. Like I said, it was a tight module, but I'm very happy with where it is right now.
It's also interesting looking at the originals, you know, it's a visual heavy module. There's a whole book of handouts that comes with it, you know. And Mike, as I recall, your 5e stuff, your 5e editions, we're working on several new handouts to throw in there as well,
yeah.
As well as the originals. But when you go through all these old modules, what you discover is that some of the TSR made changes along the way. We were just talking about this, how you don't necessarily notice that until you look at it, but the first printing of this, actually the handout art changes between the first and the second printing. For three or four of the handouts, for whatever reason, they swapped out a certain set of art for another set of art. And we actually tracked down Errol Otis, whose art was subbed in for some of the other art, and asked him why. And nobody seems to remember why.
Right.
But we have scans in there of the original first printing and some parts of the subsequent printings because the art actually changes out over time. Right. And it's been really interesting seeing that happen on all these projects.
Tim is lending his excellent editorial work on it again. So it was funny, between you and me and Tim, like, we had
three different printings of it. We were like, but page 47 has this. And you're like, it has that.
So...
yeah,
we had to go. You had the document, right? You had the on that.
Yeah, it's been cool though.
And speaking of Errol, we got him to come back and do some.
Good. Thank you for the reminder. Yeah, so you know, there's a lot of amazing art in here by Errol Otis and Jeff D and many guys. Errol's actually painting all new art for the end sheets. So when you open the book open, that 11x17 space is going to have a brand new oil painting again, produced physically, actual oil on paper. But Errol's done an amazing piece of art that'll be there, illustrating the original content, but all new images by him. 40 or 50 years later, however long it's been.
Better not be 50.
It's been a while. Anything else you want to add to that? Or? Oh, he's got to run to his game. This guy runs so many games.
Thank you, John.
See you later, man.
See you guys.
Anything else you want to add, Mike?
If anybody, by the way, if anybody signed up for the super secret playtest tomorrow, guess what you'll be playtesting? So
while we're talking about some of the stuff Mike worked on, I was going to draw your attention to some of these printer proofs we have up here. So we're going to raffle some of these off. If you come by the booth Sunday at 1, we'll hopefully have a raffle ticket because you bought something. You also get a raffle ticket for coming to the seminar, so remind me to give you those before you leave. But these are some of the printer proofs for the Linkmar project, which is, actually we're almost done with the proofing process. There's two sets up here.
So where's the foil ones?
Yeah, they're in here somewhere. Let's see, so we have, these are the ones.
Where are the foil ones?
Yeah, so these are, let me show you the difference if you can see this. This is the version that will be sold in stores, and if you did not back the Kickstarter, you'll get this version. If you back the Kickstarter, I'm gonna move this so you can see how shiny the logo is. You'll get this version that has foil on the logo. So we have copies here of the distribution versions, as well as copies of, as well as copies of the foil versions. One of the cool things about the Linkmar project, I've had the chance to do many foil projects in my career. I've never had the chance to pick out 8 different shades of foil for the same project. So we have on these 8 different, and like this one's, if you can see the like effect when you move it, 8 different shades of foil on the logos, including what's really cool is, if you work with these printers, they have these giant books of all the foil options. And believe it or not, they have like 20 or 30 options for gold foil and 20 or 30 options for silver foil. So we have 2 different kinds of silver foil. Then we got your red foil, your purple foil, your green foil, your blue foil. Then there's this is one of the gold foils, there's another version. So the Kickstarter editions, if you back the Kickstarter, look really cool. So you guys are welcome to come up here and look at the printer proofs at the end here, and then they'll be at the booth after this. The other thing you're welcome to look at is this map. So you guys may have seen the blown-up version at the booth in the hall. Yeah, I know. Too bad. And, you know, but again, going back to physical art, Doug drew every one of these buildings. I mean, that's what, and then painted them. It's just hard to believe how much, it's hard to believe he's still sane, but it's hard to believe how much work went into this. But this is a sample. Many people requested a cloth mat version. This is actually the printer sample of the backed cloth, if you want to come and feel this to get a sense of what it is. So you're welcome to come up later on and just feel the, you know, get a feel for it so you know what it is. The other thing is, I wanted to have a contest to, you know, guess the number of buildings in this picture. Whoever, you know, guesses most accurately, you know, wins some sort of prize. But unfortunately, we didn't count the number of buildings when we were making it. So I'm looking for a volunteer with severe OCD. I think it might have actually. You're up. So, whoever wants to count this, and then we'll maybe have a contest once we've established how many buildings are in here. But it's also just to reinforce the incredible effort that Doug put into this, actually hand painting whatever it is, 500, 1,000, however many buildings are there. So it's really incredible.
You should have him guess how many dead cells are in his carpal tunnel.
Yeah, that's also an option. The other thing we have here at the show is the printer literally just finished the fourth printing at DCC and shipped it out yesterday. So these were overnighted. For those of you who backed the Kickstarter, this is a version of what you'll get soon enough. This is the Shano and Doug has the original painting at his booth. And it's funny, you know, the original art never conveys as well. I mean, not this looks great, but when you see the original, it pops more. Anyway, so if you want to go by his booth and compare this to the original looks amazing. We also have the San Julian edition. There was only like 6 shipped here, but you'll get your copies if you're a backer. This is not the Kickstarter version. The Kickstarter version has red foil here over the logo as well. And then we have the brown cover, you know, not to be confused with the original version that some of you guys own of the Demon Skull. I know. And then this is the one that I didn't tell anybody about. So sometimes Doug just sends me cool pictures. I'm like, man, we should use that. So this is, we call it the Egyptian Lich. You guys may know this guy is, we just call him Egyptian Guy, who's the model for this year's road crew. And this is his girlfriend, Egyptian Lich. So Doug did this art. It looks really cool. So we did a short print of a version of the core rule book that'll just be at cons. And then we're going to take a small portion and set it aside for people who run a certain number of road crew games. They'll be eligible to buy it. But this version's for sale too, and we have some that were just here at con if you want to pick it up. But it's a really cool image. The other thing is we added a couple extra pages at the back if you haven't seen it, but flip to the back. There's a, some of the Scatch children are in these photos because we included photos of all of the people who won our tournaments over the last couple of years, among other things. So flip to the back of the latest printing and some of you may recognize some of the people in there. Let's see, the other thing I was gonna talk about was, while we're here, Mark, I hear you've been working on DCC Dying Earth.
Have. It, not just me, but the team.
That's true. Well, good point. Yes.
So we've been working on it since about November 2017, I think is when the team started really getting underway, so a little bit close to a year and a half. And it's been a lot of fun. I mean, we've, to kind of talk with and Brendan speak, we've got about 150,000 words written at this point. So it's a lot. So they'll be split over three volumes. There'll be essentially a player's guide, a player's librum is what we're calling it, which includes the four new classes that are going to be brought to this, as well as a lot of ancillary information, you know, about the setting and about, you know, how to GM and judge or judge in that setting. And then there'll be a lot of the work has been going into the primer of practical magic, which includes, I think, total across all the Dying Earth, we're doing 50 new spells. And so it is going to be a source book for additional magic for people, whether they like Dying Earth or not, or they want to use it in their setting. It's just increasing to get to that, I don't remember the number, like 766 spells that are in the known universe that are listed in the DCC RPG book. We're trying to inch our way up there to get a little bit closer. So we're doing our contributions. And that includes, you know, we've had a team of writers that's include Bob Brinkman, who's in the room here. We've got Terry Olson, Julian Bernick. For Nikki, and we've got Michael Curtis and Brendan LaSalle and Harley Strove also contributed to the spell. So it's really, we're trying to get a variety of different viewpoints and really have a rich, comprehensive, you know, sort of you know, anthology of what's both inspired by Dying Earth, but also just inspired by our own imaginations. That includes new patron spells, new divine spells, as well as a lot of new arcane spells. And so a lot of that work is going into that second volume. The third volume is the comprehensive survey of creatures and personages across the 21st aeon. You know, it's like it's the monster manual plus the patrons and the guides to that, and includes some nice thermological curios, you know, things that you might want to, you know, keep as part of the game, you know, that are inspired by the works of Dying Earth as well. I would put it about between 85 and 90% done. We've been really working to refine the language, get it right in terms of the Vancian verbiage that's, you know, a big part of what the setting that you want to inherit to the game, just being able to bring that to the table and be able to make sure that conveys, you know, the, you know, what's in the books. So a lot of the work is refining, you know, going back and passing through and taking the words and getting our dictionary of Vancian language out that we put together being in a project and really trying to make sure that it's incorporated and accurate. We're getting really close, and I think that at, you know, at this point it feels really good to see art coming together. You know, getting to see Doug's rebuild cover art. I love the fact that he's using the inspiration of some of the original publications, because that's a lot of what attracted me to the novels. You know, when I was first getting introduced to them. It's just been a great project to work on, and I'm glad we're getting very close to that, you know, that finish line of getting it out. You know, since we started, you know, about 18 months ago now.
Yeah. So. Tell them about the mechanic you're testing here in the show.
Oh, yeah. So we're trying to tweak as we go along. So one of the things that, a big part of the story is this idea that, you know, there's, everybody has grudges in a sense, right? You know, there's Kugel who's just sort of like always holding out for, you know, when is it going to be my turn? And sometimes he's trying to turn the table. So we're trying to do a mechanic at the playtesting here, which we're calling grudge tokens. So you as a player can hold on to these grudge tokens. And when you want to, you know, it's against another player who you felt like sort of needled you in that last, you know, search for something, and you want to turn the tables on them, turn in that grudge token, and it becomes this way of getting them to possibly have something bad happen to them. Maybe it becomes, they get a wild success and the tables get returned back on you, right? It becomes this kind of mechanic to like try to get that role-playing element where people are a little bit more interactive in the sense of the novels, you know, what those are. And you can also turn the tables on the judge, you know. But this is sort of like fleeting luck in that if you don't use it or there's a mechanic for pulling that away. So you want it to be a little bit more of that currency that becomes an encouragement to use over the course. And this might be an invocation that you got that you just felt like you're holding on to and you wanted to use it for that opportune time. But you also have to be judging when that opportune time is in order to do that. We're going to try that out. I think it's going to be a lot of fun just as an optional mechanic to introduce as part of the game. Because obviously that may not play well at some tables where you want a lot of cooperation or you want a lot of people that are, you know, trying to make sure that everybody's successful. But I think Dying Earth has a lot of people's, you know, are coming at it from that, you know, that Kugel standpoint where they want to really be the one who sort of gets the thing in the end. That's that their objective, even if it means stepping on the shoulders of everybody else around them a little bit. So it'll be fun to see how that goes over. So I think Julian's playing that in the playtest he's doing. I'm going to be doing it in my playtest tomorrow as well. My playtest tomorrow is actually going to be interesting because it's the first time we're doing kind of a higher level all magicians playtest.
Oh, wow.
So that's we're crazy. Trying to see how that's going to work, you know, especially with the, you know, the magical creatures, the Diehawks assigned to scenes that really affect magics at this higher level. And so it'll be interesting to see how, especially with all the new spells, you know, how that really plays out in terms of how wild it gets. But I'm really interested in seeing what the reaction is going to be about that. So, yeah.
It's going to be awesome. And this will be a pretty hefty book or series of books. It'll be most likely a box set.
Yeah, like 3 volumes over in a box set probably.
Yeah, and that's where we started with Linkmar before we added on 8 modules. So we'll see how this goes. We'll see how it goes. But it'll be a big project. It already is a big project. Yeah. It'll probably expand as we go through this process, but it's coming along.
Miniature line.
Cool. Anything else you want to add before I cover some other things? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's getting close, and I think that I'm excited. I think a lot of people, you know, I've talked to, want to see this, you know, how it, not just for the fact that it adds sort of the dance setting, but it also adds a lot of options for judges. And I think we're really trying to encourage the compatibility of the core rules and being really a source book kind of toolkit for that, you know,
yeah.
For bringing the new patrons, new spells, even some of these optional mechanics that you might want to introduce. So.
And actually, that's a good point. That, you know, this core rule book will still run all of these settings, basically settings for the core rule book, perfectly well. You know, and none of these would change the rules in even significant ways. You can opt in or opt out of block tokens and so on. And so we're hopefully still maintaining through that promise of one core rule book, not a ton of splat books, well, zero splat books, just some setting books and some adventures and so on. Cool. Thanks, Mark. Yeah. So let me see. What else did I have to talk about here? I was going to cover, it's the road crew and a couple of shipping updates. So I think it was at Gen Con that I mentioned for the road crew, we're looking at doing a zine of sorts that'll help connect that community a little bit. I mean, there's already an amazing number of people running Road Crew games. For those of you who don't know, the Road Crew is where we send you free swag for running DCC games at your local store, at your local library, at your local bar, any public venue. Anyway, Judge Zed, who's been profiled on our website, is working on the first issue of the zine, which will be called We Are the Road Crew. And it's actually written, edited, laid out, and there's art in process. You will hopefully be seeing more of that soon. And that'll be free to anybody who games in the Road Crew. And eventually we're going to reach out to the community and ask you guys for contributions as well. So if you're somebody who always wanted to share your write-up of this, your stats for that, or whatever it might be, this will hopefully be a venue for you to do that that reaches a lot of people playing DCC. Of course, you can also self-publish through the third-party program, however you want to do it, but this will be another way to do it. So that's coming along as well. And a couple other shipping updates. So the DCC Annual and the Chain Coffin are one of our more recent Kickstarters. I have here spiral-bound copies of the latest layouts, and these will be in the raffle on Sunday if you guys want to show up for that. And you're welcome to come look at them here or at the booth afterwards. The main intent here is just to show you they're pretty far along. So these are each 90% done. Chain Coffin is actually Mike just sent me his proofread edits like 2 days ago or something, 3 days ago.
Before I got on a plane, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah. So we're processing the final proofreader edits, but it's almost completely done. So this is going to go to the printer probably in the next 2 weeks or so. I mean, it takes a while to print because it has the spinning maps, but it's just about done. And then the DCC Annual, this is just a random piece of art that still needs to place, so ignore that. But the annual is just about done, and I know we haven't actually discussed a lot of the content here. So the art's amazing, the content's great. If you want to come through and flip through and check this out, you're welcome to do that, either here at the booth later on. But they're both nearly done. Man, it's a good spread. And we'll be shipping to you guys as soon as they're ready. And then Trapsylvania has shipped. I think our annual, so I think I'm almost done. Now, let me check my list here. Believe it or not, I'm actually killing time a little bit because we have a special guest coming by soon. So while we're waiting on our special guest, I'm going to tell you what I've been reading lately. Mike and I share an appreciation for obscure publishers of Appendix N. For whatever reason, there's now a lot of specialty publishers who are republishing Appendix N stuff from like the 20s, 30s, 40s. And our theory is that a lot of it's in the public domain now, so you know anybody can publish this stuff. But I'm going to, I'll name a couple. I won't name that one we talked about.
Yeah.
He has a grudge against one of them, so we're not going to cover that one. But in terms of other ones, a couple interesting publishers out there. There's one called Centipede Press. They published a great library of Fritz Leiber stuff, Michael Moorcock's Elric books. They did you've probably all heard the name Clark Ashton Smith as a writer. He was also a sculptor and a painter. They published a book of his sculpture and painting. You know, if you get a chance, check out Centipede Press. There's another one called Adventure House, which mostly does pulp reprints, but what they did recently was an auction of the possessions of Glenn Lord. If you don't know that name, he was the primary literary agent for the estate of Robert E. Howard for many decades. I mean, when he passed away, he left behind a crazy collection of Robert E. Howard artifacts, including like every Conan zine ever published, like the Japanese editions of Conan, etc. So their website is worth watching, I think. Just I actually bought some stuff from their latest auction. It's just a crazy amount of Kony and memorabilia going on. And then there's another publisher called Pagana Press, which is publishing Lord Dunsany, Clark Ashton Smith, some Fritz Leiber. Their stuff's really expensive, but really beautifully made. They like hand print everything. It's pretty incredible. So you're welcome to, anyway, check those out when you get a chance. They're all, you want to add any?
Nightshade Books, if anyways, that's another good one.
And they have William Hope Hodgson.
I know they're reprinting. They're actually reprinting a lot of the, they had the William Hope Hodgson line for a while in hardcover, but that went out of print at the price of it. But now they're reprinting it in softcover, so if you miss out on the hardcover, you still want to get the sign. You can get it through Amazon. So.
Okay. But, yeah. Cool. So that concludes some of our official announcements. What I'm now going to do is walk over here and pull out a painting, and then a couple of folks are going to come up to talk about this painting. So come on up, Jim. You guys are welcome to stay up here. Okay. Come on up, Jim and Jeff. You guys who don't know, this is Mr. Jim Kitchen and Mr. Jeff Easley. And I have... this looks like a garbage bag. It is actually a very sophisticated way of concealing a Jeff Easley original. This is one of the covers he did for one of our Linkmar modules, one written by Mr. Brinkman, as I recall.
I think so.
And Jim, would you like to
cover
this?
I will. Let's put this by Jeff real quick. I had a tough year last year. I had a very tough year last year. And one of the greatest things about DCC is not the game, but the community. There isn't a single person in this room that hasn't in some way or shape or form contributed to the community and contributed to the whole of what DCC has become, right? I know if I see a person with a DCC shirt, I've got a kindred spirit. During the last year, one of the things that was sort of interesting was Jen actually pinged me and said, did you know that Jeff's doing the cover for Bob's first adventure? And I said, no, I didn't. And we talked about it, and a little further on, yep, so Joe's got a mock-up, I was at my lowest, I lost my dad in October, and Bob couldn't have been more supportive. You know, I said last night at a dinner, what got me through the last year are all the people that I've known through gaming. And so I reached out to Jeff, and that's why, in an attempt to sort of give something back to the community, Bob and Jen, I'd like to give you Jeff Easley's original for Bob's first published event. You're a good guy, Bob.
Does explain why Mr. Easley wouldn't return my emails anymore.
And so this is what our community is about. I can't think of anybody that's done more for the community than Bob and Jen in the last 4 or 5 years. We all know Bob is hoarse by the end of these shows. We all know the impact the Brinkmans have had on this community, and I'd like to think this is just one small way of giving it back. So, sorry for the shenanigans over the last day or so, but Bob, you're so welcome. And thank you, Jeff. Oh. Jeff's been a great sport about this, and thank you for giving us
thanks,
the time.
Thanks, Jim. This is a great call.
No worries. Yeah. So, with that, our little interruption's over. Bob?
Thank you very much. That's it, guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks, you guys. Thanks. Everything he said is right on. Good job, man.
Whoa.